After 2,000 years, a mystery lost to time is about to be unearthed.
It's the tomb of the Dragon Emperor and his army.
And a legendary evil will be awoken. Universal Pictures.
Good going, Dad. He raised another mummy. In his tomb, he said he had control of the five elements.
I hate mummies!
They never play fair!
And the producers of The Mummy and The Mummy Returns.
How exactly he was supposed to fend them off?
When the Emperor built the Great Wall, he buried his enemies underneath it. I will call them to battle once again.
So these are the good undead guys, right?
This summer.
I tell you to fasten your seatbelts, but it was too cheap to buy any.
Why am I laughing?
Beyond death, beyond imagination, lies an adventure that will live for all eternity. The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Hello, and welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello.
And I'm Claire. Hi. This episode, we're delving into the mysteries of time and trying not to get killed by a grumpy terracotta dude. Michael, what's the movie?
This week, we are talking about The Mummy, the Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. Yes, we are going on vacation with the O'Connells to China this time to fight some more evil mummies.
So, they're not mummies. China doesn't have mummies, but yeah,
it's
go on.
The Mummy. It's still a mummy.
I get it. It's the name of the franchise. You can't change the name of the franchise.
We'll tackle why they decided to do China later on. So The Mummy opened on August the 1st, 2008. Sandwiched between the release of two other unloved sequels. Well, one did really well. Exiles, I Want to Believe. That kind of flopped. And The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. That's it. That's the one.
It didn't make a massive impression, did it? I didn't even know they'd done a sequel to that. So,
Great cast, though. Like, all the cast has grown up to be really well. Okay. Maybe we'll cover that in a future episode. The box office was, it made $403.4 million against a budget of $145 million. So that's quite an expensive movie to make.
Ooh.
Really,
it is,
expensive.
But that's a decent return, though. Made back
it
four
is.
Times the budget.
But I just want to take you back in the past to the previous Mummy movies. So the first movie had a budget of $80 million and took $416 million. The second movie, The Mummy Returns, had a budget of $98 million and then made $435 million. And then even the reboot with Tom Cruise, the movie that came out a few years ago when they were trying to do the whole monster mummy universe thing, it had a budget of $160 million and only made $410 million. These movies cannot break over $450 million.
That's really consistent, isn't it, across all of them?
It's like
it gets
cursed.
Higher for each one, and the box office is just like, ooh, the curse of the mummy movies.
It's really weird, isn't it? Like, you think kind of
it's
like,
it's quite weird that they all made 400. Like, or it, thereabouts.
But, yeah, but look, between the highest was The Mummy Returns with 435. Now, that's so weird to me that all these movies couldn't break that barrier, but didn't do any less either. Like, they felt the need to reboot the franchise after this one, to do the Tom Cruise one. So they rebooted the franchise. They tried making a new series.
They spent more money.
And
still made the same.
Yeah, well, they're kind of like, this budget for this one was 145, and then they only bumped it up to 160, well, I think 15 million more. That must have been Tom Cruise's salary alone.
Yeah, I was going to say, that difference would have been Tom Cruise. It won't have been anything else.
Exactly. So that's so weird for me. It ended up number 13 in the worldwide chart of that year. So the movies that came up before it that is in the chart, here's my our favourite part, of course.
Go on, I love this bit.
The number one movie that year was The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Then it was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. What kind of surprised me it was that high. We will be covering that.
Yeah,
we'll
probably cover that at some point. I've got plenty to say about that.
You know what?
Film.
I don't know. When you rewatch it, it's quite good. I don't know if movies
I don't believe you.
I watched it recently and I was like, this is probably my second favourite Indiana Jones movie.
Wow.
I watched that with you and we walked out of that movie theatre going, this is the worst movie we've ever watched. We go back and watch it.
Okay, well, let's put a pin in that conversation and we'll cover it. We'll cover it soon. There you go. There's a promise to you, listeners.
And then we got Hancock, what was the Will Smith film about superheroes. It did really well. But no,
I like that movie.
But no sequel. No one loves a sequel to talk about.
No.
You would think that kind of movie would have it, like, if it made that much money and was that much way up the charts and had a low budget, why didn't they make a sequel? Then we have WALL-E, Kung Fu Panda, Madagascar, Escape to Africa, Iron Man, Twilight.
The first Iron Man.
The first Iron Man, yeah. It was all the way down that chart. And they made a whole universe from it. Quantum of Solace.
Unloved sequel.
Sex and the City, Mamma Mia, and The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. It's another, like, another eventful year, but quite a lot of, like, beginning of sequels or sequels within that list. But other movies that came out this year, now I went down the list quite thoroughly, and there was quite a lot of movies out that year, but I kind of, like, just picked ones out that you and me might like hearing about. So, so other movies that you, High School Musical 3.
Okay.
But that was really big, but didn't make a lot of money. Incredible Hulk, Bolt, one of my favourite Disney.
Hang on, which Incredible Hulk? The
Edward Norton one.
Ed Norton one.
Yeah, the one before that was called Hulk. It's a really good movie. Flopped.
Yeah, completely. I get confused flopped. Which one lands.
We'll have to cover that one day because that is actually a sequel to the Eric Bana one. Bolt, great Disney movie. Slumdog Millionaire, Tropical Thunder, Cloverfield, Hellboy 2, The Strangers, one of Claire's favourite horrors.
Oh!
Milk.
Just jumped in my seat at the mention of that film.
She hid behind a travel pillar in the movie theatre, guys. Milk, Hurt Locker, and one of mine and Claire's favourite flops of all time that we went and watched just before we saw the Backstreet Boys in concert. Speed Racer.
I love that movie. I love that movie.
Have you ever shown that to your kids?
No, not yet. No, but it's the school holidays, so they're going to watch it. We've got, 5 weeks left of school holidays, so we can watch that movie at least 10 times.
Oh, yeah. Charlie would love that.
I think he would.
It's all like, he's really into Mario Kart, isn't he? So I think that kind of like,
he loves that kind of stuff.
Oh, I might watch it today.
We're going to watch that movie.
So there's all kind of like some figures for you. Claire, do you have any behind the scenes stuff?
Well, yes. I mean, the big production changes to note in this movie from the previous ones in the franchise is a change of director. So we don't have Stephen Sommers anymore. Stephen Sommers wrote and directed the first two movies of this version of the franchise. The whole concept of remaking and rebooting The Mummy from the original 1932 movie had been his idea. This was the whole franchise was his brainchild. So he'd written and directed the first two movies.
Why didn't he do this one?
He didn't write or direct. I think he just felt he'd done what he wanted to do with it. He was just like, you know, I've done my thing. He'd moved on. He'd started his own production company. He had released Van Helsing, I think in 2004 that was. So he'd moved on with his movie career and was working on new projects. And I think he just didn't want to go back to these characters in this story. He did stay on as executive producer.
What means nothing. Do you think he just basically, they released Mummy Mummy Returns, then they did The Scorpion King, and he was like, whoa, 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 I didn't sign off on this crap. Like,
but he did all the Scorpion King movies. He was involved in those.
Well, only executive producer. That means kind of like...
Well, that's just, because he, I guess, had created
the franchise.
This version of the franchise. So they kept him attached that way. But I don't know. I mean, his official line was just, I've had enough of mummy movies. I've done what I wanted to do with them and I've moved on. I don't think there was any bad blood. I don't think he objected to this sequel, but he just didn't want to be creatively involved in it. But because of that, perhaps, probably, I think, we also lost Rachel Weisz. She is not in this movie. There are a few versions of why she didn't make it. The director, Rob Cohen, quite unkindly, I think, and I think he's since taken it back, said at the time that she didn't want to be in it because she didn't want to play the mother of a 21-year-old. Because her son's character, because they skipped more time in movie universe than had passed in real life. So in terms of the timeline of the three movies in the franchise.
Yeah.
The original, The Mummy, was released in 1999. It was set in 1923. Mm-hmm. Mummy Returns came out 2 years later, 2001, set in 1933. So 10 years have passed in the movie world. Rick and Evie now have an 8-year-old son.
Right.
Then Tomb of the Dragon Emperor is released in 2008. So 7 years have passed in real life between those two movies. The movie set in 1946. So that's 13 years. Rather than seven. So instead of being 15, which Alex would be if the movie had followed our timeline, he's actually 21. That more time has passed. And so, the suggestion from director Rob Cohen was that Rachel Weisz didn't want to play a mother of a 21-year-old. She was 38 when this movie came out. So technically, yes, could have been mother of a 21-year-old, but she would have been a very young mother of a 21-year-old. Well, interestingly, Brendan Fraser is only 2 years older than her. He was 40 when Tomb of the Dragon Emperor came out. Clearly had no issue being father to a 21-year-old. But I don't know.
Her character must have been in her mid-20s when she made the first movie. So you would expect them to be in there if they're like the first movie came out when the character was like 27, 25, 28. And then you're kind of like looking at 20 years. So they should have been in there late at that kid of that age. They should have been in there, the character should have been in their 50s.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, if she'd been in the movie and no one had said anything, I don't think I would have found myself at any point, given the suspension of disbelief that's required for the entire franchise, I don't think there's a point at which I'd gone, but Rachel Weisz doesn't look old enough to be mother to a 21-year-old.
This is true. I was talking about ages recently and Unloved Sequels. Recently, I was just made aware that I didn't know, watching Jurassic Park for the last 30-odd years and never realised the age between Sam Neill and Laura Dern. It's kind of when you look back at it,
it's creepy,
like,
isn't it?
Oh. I was like...
So at least we don't have that in this movie.
Exactly.
Because Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser are basically of an age, and also Maria Bello, who came in to take over the role of Evie O'Connor, is actually 1 year older than Brendan Fraser, so still of a comparable age.
Yes.
So there were other theories bandied about she didn't want to leave her son. Her son, I think, was about 2 or 3 when this movie came out. She said it had nothing to do with it. She made 2 other movies that year. But I suppose, you know, this was a 5-month shoot in China. So I certainly wouldn't have wanted to leave either of my kids for that length of time at age 2. I mean, she could have taken the kid with her, I suppose, but then I don't know. Anyway, she said, according to her, and I think we should take her word for why she didn't make the movie, she just didn't like the script. She didn't want to, I think, again, if Stephen Sommers had done it, she might have been involved, but she didn't like the script. She just didn't want to make the movie. So she opted out. And so Maria Bello came in, which is interesting casting.
Yeah, seeing that she's very really
in
known,
a lot of ways
known for like Coyote Ugly mainly. That's how I know her.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I know her best for. And let me be clear before we get into the rest of this conversation. I love her. I think she's brilliant. I love her in Coyote Ugly, which is the thing that I've seen her in that I most recall seeing her in.
Yes.
I don't love her in this movie.
No, I agree.
She's not British, which wouldn't be an issue had she not been taking on Rachel Weisz's character, who is very English. And they continue, the character remains English. They didn't decide to kind of scrap that or anything, which I think probably would have been weird if they had scrapped it. But yeah, so that's our big change. And of course, Alex has been recast because the boy that was 8 in the previous movie could not play a 21-year-old in this movie because he would have been 15.
So while we're on the conversation of Alex, Alex's character in The Mummy Returns, He is English with a quite a
yes. harsh Having English just accent. Said, oh, yeah, it would have been weird if they'd changed her from being British to being American. That's exactly what happened. And the actor is Australian.
He's Luke Canadian Ford Australian. Is not He was born
he's
in Canada, raised in Australia, and then he's doing an American accent. Why couldn't he just do an English accent?
Maybe he heard Maria Bellows and thought, well, I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying.
But he's Australian. It's easier for an Australian to translate into an English accent.
You would think. You would think.
Because like, as an English person living in America, most of the time, most Americans go to me, are you Australian? And I go, no.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't sound Australian. But they have a different... So I was like, why didn't they just keep him as, you know, keep him English? Didn't understand that decision. Because as an 8-9-year-old, even if he spent like 15 to 20 years, he was only 18, so he spent 14 to 15 years in America afterwards, even though his parents live in the same house in England, he still wouldn't lose his English accent at that age.
Well, and it's very clear from the beginning of, it's very clear from the beginning of the movie that Rick and Evie have retired from their mummy hunting life. I don't know, they portrayed them with this very quintessentially English lifestyle, which suggested to me that they have been living in England and living that life for a long time, and yet their very English sounding child is now American.
Well, she's become a romance novelist as well after studying architecture and culture for many years.
Turn for her.
But I have a theory on this. I have a theory why they did that. To
Go
distance
on.
Herself from the Rachel Weisz's portrayal of that character. Now, I think at the beginning, her books, so she's at the book reading, are called The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. So, and she finishes by reading the ending of The Mummy Returns. So I think what Rob Cohen was trying to say is the first two movies are her doing her book reading. And the portrayal of Evie's portrayal in the book is somewhere who she aspires to be, but that's not really her. So the first two movies are actually just her novels. And what we're seeing
is... So she was always Maria Bello and Rachel Weisz is like her fantasy self.
Yes. And then The Mummy, that's... The Tomb of the Dragon, the Evie in that is actually the true Evie. Because obviously Maria Bello has probably signed a huge contract to stay on after this one was successful.
She did. She signed a 3-movie deal. Her and Luke Ford both came into the franchise for the 3-movie deal. There was an intention to make more sequels. The next movie, I would have loved to have seen the next movie that they were planning, was going to be The Mummy, Rise of the Aztec with Antonio Banderas as the villain.
See, that would have been good.
That would have been good. Well, maybe it wouldn't. Maybe that's the problem. But I would have watched it. Based on my experience of the 3 movies so far. That's quite a hot take on that character. I hadn't seen it that way. I think if that's what they were trying to do, that's personally, I think that's a bit of a lame angle. If that's what the production team were trying to achieve, if that's what Rob Cohen was going for, I think that's a bit of a lazy, it's not quite.
I thought he probably thought it was clever. He probably thought it was clever, like only 30
people
will get this
twist.
Maybe
he did, but he was wrong. If that's what he was aiming for, he was wrong. Because I actually, originally, when I first watched that scene, there's the line that she says, she finishes reading and then one of the audience members asks her about the character. Literally the first time we see Maria Bello's face, because we've seen her from behind reading from the book, and the camera comes around to her face, and the first time you see this new actress in role, she says about the character of Evie, honestly, she's a completely different person.
Yes.
And when I first saw that, I was like, oh, I see what they did there. That's a bit of a nod to the fact that it's a completely different person playing the part.
Yeah.
However, if they were doing what you've just suggested, then my take on that line is completely different. I think that sucks. I've completely changed my opinion of it. But
I get it.
I don't know. I see where you're going with it and it does make sense. I just really hope that's not what they were trying to do, because I think that is lazy, I think, of them, if that's what they were aiming for.
My main issue with Maria Bellows is her chemistry between her and Brendan Fraser. I just didn't buy
this
it.
This is the thing.
I didn't she's buy not, it.
She's not a bad actress.
No.
She's... I'm not sure she's even a bad actress in this movie. I think she's given a really crappy part. I think either I see exactly why Rachel Weisz didn't do the movie, because her part was crap in this movie.
Yeah.
Or having lost her, they rewrote it and made it even crapper, because I think she was given a really poor part. I think some of her lines, it's almost like, you know how in, here's a weird reference, you know how in Galaxy Quest, the bit where, there's the bit where Sigourney Weaver's character is repeating what the computer says, and one of the other characters calls her out on it, and she says, this is my job, I have one job, I know it's stupid, but it I'm going to do it, because that's what I'm here for.
Yeah,
like, I'm just here to repeat the thing that someone else already said. And there were moments in this movie where I felt like that was the role they gave her. Something would happen, and then it would cut to her, and she'd say a really obvious thing that we already knew, but that maybe hadn't been said out loud. She didn't, you know, she didn't feel as part of the story as Evie had previously with Rachel Weisz. And you're absolutely right. The chemistry between her and Brendan Fraser, and I don't know if it's because their chemistry is poor or because he had such a good chemistry with Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
But it changed the dynamic of them as a couple.
Yeah.
So much that it really weakened, and that there's, because of the way it's been written, they were so central to the story. To me, it really weakened the story. As I was watching it, I was thinking, does Evie need to be in this movie? Could they have just removed the character?
Yeah, because it could easily have just been a father and son adventure, you know. You know, they could have played up to Rachel Weisz. Rachel Weisz would have easily been like, I'm not doing this. I've got my baby. If that was the real reason, whatever. Can we do some sorts, you know, write a character out, make out that they've had another kid and Rachel Weisz character stays at home. Or like they did in Jurassic Park 3, where Laura Dern wasn't available. So they kind of wrote her character in as a based at home kind of character, where she kind of like was a part of the big adventure, and it wasn't so much a cameo, but the part of the film, but she did it from afar. You know, they could have, you know, they easily could. I just don't see the need at this point of making a movie like this that relies on two big franchise entries already to suddenly change the actress that has great chemistry. And the fans, like, the minute you're going to go in there, this is not like they recast the whole thing or rebooted it. They just had everybody the same, apart from mainly Rachel Weisz. You know?
Yes. I mean, that was the only returning character that was recast. I'm just quickly scanning through the movie in my head. And obviously Alex, as we talked about, because of the time difference within the universe. But we've still got Brendan Fraser. We've still got John Hannah. I like that we've still got both. I mean, you wouldn't be able to make it without Brendan Fraser. I think
Brendan Fraser is fantastic in this. Like, he's like a warm blanket. He, like, everything he does is great. He's so underused these days.
Hollywood, I might add him to my list of people who should be in every movie.
Brendan Fraser, Patrick Stewart, and Tim Curry. Now, I would watch that.
Who wouldn't watch that movie? Who would not watch that movie?
I would watch that movie. But like Brendan Fraser, you can't do a mummy movie without Brendan Fraser. He's
they tried, and let's see how that turned out.
Well, it made the same money as the other one, so I don't know.
Yeah, but they imagined it as the start of a, you know, they thought they were making the next MCU, didn't they?
Yes,
when
they
rebooted The Mummy, and they definitely did not achieve that. Whether they would have done with Brendan Fraser, I don't know. But
did you feel, going on to John Hannah, did you feel that he wasn't there for most of the filming? His scenes were weird. He seemed like he was separated. Every action scene, he was by himself. He wasn't really with them too.
Yeah.
I really felt like...
No, I didn't notice it while I was watching, but now you say that, I'm like, actually, yeah, he...
There's only like a handful of shots when they're
in... It was very much a subplot for him, wasn't it? He was like a side story for a lot of it.
I don't think he went to China, because he's only in the plane scene, the nightclub scene, with them, really. And then that's it. And the other stuff is all... You don't really see him in China, even like the Yeti scene. Yetis, I don't know why Yetis are in this movie.
The Yeti scene.
But the one thing I do have to say, what I did appreciate about this movie, is Rob Cohen has a massive obsession with China. So every historical little fact and all of the like little kind of like gadgets that went off with the arrows and stuff when they first they're all accurate. Like, he went out of his way to bring actual facts to the screen. Maybe he spent more time in pre-production than he did in casting, what am I saying?
Maybe.
It was like, we've got Maria Bellas. I don't care, I've got arrows.
I'm just going to interject there, though, because I think, Maria Bello aside, mm-hmm. I like the cast of this movie. I like Jet Li. I like Michelle Yeoh. I like Isabella Leung.
Yeah.
She's
a little bit wooden. But I think that might be...
Yeah, she's not the strongest in it.
I think that might be just a language barrier because it's not her first language. So watching her... I watched her in a couple of Chinese movies and she's really, really good. But...
Also feel like she's not... Considering she's quite supposed to be quite a punchy character, she's quite a hands-on, feisty woman.
Yeah.
She was a very stereotypical... I don't feel like she was a particularly fleshed out character. I don't feel like there was much identity given to her other than kick-ass love interest.
Yeah.
She kind of fit into a box or was put into a box, maybe. I don't think she was really given much to work with in terms of showing off acting chops. She showed off a lot of action skill, but I don't think she was really given very much. And the whole love story with her and Alex was just a bit like, oh, there's a boy, there's a girl, they need to fall in love, we're in love now, I love you, but I'm immortal so I can't love you, oh, I'm not immortal anymore. Mwah!
I really liked Michelle Yeoh. I like the whole Michelle Yeoh and Jet Li backstory. I would love to watch that movie. Where was that movie? I could easily watch 2 hours of that. That was really good. I felt that was so good. Do you want to hear a fun fact, though, while we're on the topic about casting and stuff and how much we love Brendan Fraser?
Go on. I've got some fun facts for you, and yours are probably a lot more fun than mine. So, get them in.
Rob Cohen was originally going to kill off Brendan Fraser in this, and it was going to be... It was originally going to be The Sun and Mirella Bello as a movie. His original plan was to get rid of Brendan Fraser. And the studio went, no, you can't get rid of Brendan Fraser. So he really wanted to kill off Brendan Fraser and not have him in the movie at all. So that would have been a complete
Can you imagine?
I don't think this movie...
Thank God that didn't happen.
Can you imagine? This would be like 200 million at the box office. I think that Brendan Fraser fans would be so angry.
Can you imagine the people who would have gone to see this movie and then like 10 minutes in, Brendan Fraser's dead, and they'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Or they might have killed him off in that whole stabbing scene. In Mummy Returns, they kill off Evie. And then in this one, Brendan Fraser character gets stabbed. I'm like, this couple... Can we stop killing people off and bringing them back to life in these movies? I'm like,
premise of the movie, isn't it? Is bringing dead people back to life.
This is true. This is very true. But But I felt this movie was on a much, much bigger scale. I appreciated the scale that they went to.
Yes.
You know, I felt like the special effects had improved quite a lot, apart from these movies cannot do fire. Stop CGing fire in these movies. Those fireballs, oh my God. I was just like, what are these fireballs? Like, in the original Mummy, you kind of like go, oh, this is a bit painful. But like, the Mummy Returns, back then they had the technology to do the Scorpion King well, but that still looked shocking. And in this movie, I was like, okay. Beginning of this movie, I was like, oh, these kind of like statues coming to life, this looks good. Special effects, CGI is improved, it's going to be good. And then they fucking play with fire again. And those fireballs made me so angry. I was just like, come on, guys. You've got the budget now.
Yeah.
You saved on Rachel Weisz's salary. You got Maria Bello. And you can afford some decent fire. And the comedy. Sorry, but the comedy in this. The script. Oh, my God. Just like the cheap comedy. Like the bit when John Hannah gets vomited on by the yak. And he goes, oh, the yak's yacked. Oh. I was like, did they build this whole scene and put a yak on a plane? Just for that scene.
Yeah, so the yak could yak. Yeah,
they spent
I think
the
that's exactly what happened.
On a puppet yak, just so it could yak on him. I was just like, vomit on
but
him.
Again,
like,
I think part of that is because we've lost that relationship with Rick and Evie, because I think a lot of the comedy in the earlier movies just came naturally from their dynamic. And then John Hannah kind of fit into that on the side of that relationship, where I think... Now they were trying to crowbar in the jokes and the humor a lot more. Yeah. And the thing I really didn't like was the relationship between Rick and Alex, the kind of competitiveness between them. There's that whole scene with the guns, and they're like, it's just willy waving, really, wasn't it? And it was like
men ego.
But they were trying to be funny with it. It felt like they were trying to make, those boys. And I was just like, this is just embarrassing.
I felt really like cringy. That was more Rob Cohen than anything. Do you know who they wanted to direct this before they got Rob Cohen on board?
I don't. Please tell me.
Joe Johnson, the guy behind Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Jumanji and Jurassic Park 3. So that would have been a very different movie as well.
That would have been a different movie.
And he dropped out of it. He was in pre-production. He was in conversations. He was helping to get the movie together. But then he decided to leave Universal for another job. And he went off to make Anthony Hopkins' The Wolfman. What is a really good movie, but just didn't perform very well.
Mm. Well, there we go. Hey, yeah. I've got a fun fact for you that's got nothing to do with this movie, but I'm just crowbarring it in because, do you know what? This is my show as much as it is yours. So I'm going to tell it. This is actually a fun fact for The Mummy Returns, which is not the subject of this podcast. It's so tenuous, but this is Claire's tenuous connection to the movie, The Mummy Returns. The archaeological dig scene at Hamanaptra was filmed at Bryant's Lane Quarry, which is in Heath and Reach, which is, I mean, technically not in, but in terms of addresses, is in Leighton Buzzard, my glorious hometown where I grew up. Tenuous link there.
Was your dad, Claire's dad was also mayor. Was your dad mayor when
he
they
was
that?
Mayor at various, hang on. So we're talking about 2001 movie. No, he was mayor in 2001. Shout out to my dad if you're listening. He was mayor in 2001, but I think he would have stopped being mayor before this movie came out. And based on when they were making it, it probably, no. And even if he was, to be perfectly honest, it would have had absolutely zero to do with him. But Claire's tenuous connection to the movie. We need a jingle for that. I'm going to come up with one every week.
You're going to have to find tenuous connections from now on then.
I'll find some. Maybe not every episode. That might be a bit much. There's your first.
80 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but it'd be 80 degrees of Claire Harris.
80 degrees. It's meant to be 6, but for me, let's make it 80.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's my really tenuous connection to this movie via the sequel in the franchise that we're not discussing. But yeah, some of it was filmed in my hometown where I don't live anymore. So I feel like I should say, because based on how I've been talking so far about this movie, it might not sound like it, but I actually quite like this movie. Really? I know I've been quite down on a lot of aspects. I do. I know I've been slagging off a lot of aspects of the movie. There's plenty in it that I don't like. But overall, as a movie, I quite enjoyed it. Now, I'd seen the first two in the franchise years and years and years ago. And then I don't think I'd seen this one before. I did a rewatch with my husband, three movies over the course of, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks. My husband was very excited to watch the first movie with me because he likes these movies too. When it was time to watch The Mummy Returns, he's like, okay, I guess we have to because we're doing the thing. And I said to him then, I really like The Mummy Returns. And he's like, well, I prefer the third one. And I thought, okay, fair enough. Well, I haven't seen the third one, so I don't know. We watched The Mummy Returns. I enjoyed The Mummy Returns. One of the things I liked about The Mummy Returns was because they didn't really have to do a whole load of backstory. Yeah. They just got straight into the action and it was a real romp.
Yeah.
They didn't have to go too far into mythology because they already established the mythology. When it came to this movie, obviously they had to re-establish that. So it did feel a bit like we were going back to the beginning with a new mythology. I quite liked that though, because I feel like if they'd kept going with the Imhotep story, it would have felt a bit like they were flogging a dead horse. So I like that they changed angles, even though there are no mummies in China. These are not mummies because mummies are not a thing in ancient China. But anyway, I get it, for the sake of the franchise. The franchise is called The Mummy, so we're calling the movie The Mummy. Yeah, but I watched the movie and I found it enjoyable. And I can see why my husband prefers the third one to the second one. I'm not sure I prefer the third to the second. Do not dislike this movie. I dislike the casting decision of putting Maria Bello into this movie. Again, nothing against her as a person or an actress, but it doesn't. She just doesn't work in that partnership with Brendan Fraser in the way that Rachel Weisz did. And so I think it was a mistake to make the movie the way they did with that character. But that aside, again, if we hadn't had Rachel Weisz, I don't think I would have objected to Maria Bello in the role. I just knew it could have been better.
So in that case, how many mummies would you give this movie out of five?
I would give this movie 3.5 mummies that are not mummies, because we're in China, so they're not mummies, out of five. It's a good movie. It's not a great movie. I'm not going to go all the way to 4, thinking at other movies that I've scored at 4. And I feel like I might have shot my load a bit early, looking back now to our Speed 2 episode where I gave it 4 out of 5. And now I've watched more sequels and I've got a better benchmark. I feel I might have been a little bit generous with that 4 out of 5. I enjoyed this movie. I would happily watch it again. Yeah. I am disappointed that they didn't make the next movie in the franchise. I would have loved to have seen The Rise of the Aztec. I would have loved to have seen Antonio Banderas in this universe. If they'd got Rachel Weisz back, it would have been which they wouldn't have done, because we know Maria Bello was contracted in for the 3 movies. So maybe it wouldn't have worked on that basis. But I liked it. How about you? How many not mummies would you score it out of 5?
Well, I think they're mummies. Okay, since Universal Studios started making big Hollywood movies, since they released the first The Mummy movie in 1932, they have made 14 mummy movies. So there's quite a lot of mummy movies to unpack. And I have watched all 14 mummy movies over the period of the last, well, not recently, but I have seen all 14 mummy movies.
You've seen all of them?
Yeah, I'm a big Universal Universal monster movie. I love the Dracula and the Frankenstein series. I like all of them. I have them all. Compared to all of those movies and the old black and white ones and even the new Tom Cruise one, I can't give this film more than 2 mummies.
Oh,
I love Brendan Fraser. Oh. If it was just Brendan Fraser for 2 hours fighting mummies and the rest of the cast wasn't there, and I just understand why they couldn't pick a different Egyptian or a different mummy to fight. Like, they could have gone down the having a female mummy and called like done something with Cleopatra or something quite fun, you know. I just think sticking with changing the, it just didn't feel like a mummy movie to me, and Brendan Fraser made it a mummy movie. Brendan Fraser was fantastic in it. I love Brendan Fraser. Brendan Fraser gets 5 mummies out of 5 for me. But the rest of it,
sure.
Just,
if it was just him and Jet Li fighting for 2 hours, I'd be all over that.
So would I. Why didn't they make that movie? Just him on his own going to fight, like an Indiana Jones kind of thing. But I can't get behind the rest of it. I really found it really uncomfortable. It didn't compare to the other 2 movies with me. I really missed Rachel Weisz in this movie. And I only can give it 2 mummies out of 5, I'm afraid.
So there we go. The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. Bit of a mixed bag. It has divided the 2 of us, I think. But what do you think? Tell us, listeners. What do you think of this movie? What did you think of the show? You can get in touch with us. Email us unlovesequels@gmail.com. You can find us on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram @unlovedsequels. Michael, any final words on The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor?
Guys, let us know what your favourite mummy movie is. Is it the old-fashioned Universal monster movies, or do you like the modern day incarnation of them? Let us know. Like Claire said, contact us on Twitter if you need something quick and easy to contact with. We're quite active on Twitter and Facebook. Other than that, we'll see you soon for another episode of Unloved Sequels. But until next time, keep you watching the screen.